Green Bay. WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay. And always streaming ABC on the News, Civic Media app.
I'm Andy Field. So now what? That plea deal Hunter Biden's attorney struck with prosecutors for unpaid taxes fell apart in court as the judge scrutinized every part of the agreement. ABC News legal contributor Kimberly Whaley.
If it really is that they were on different islands, then it's possible that she'll have to adjourn this and they're going to take it outside of the courtroom, outside of the context to try to hash out something that is more bulletproofed moving forward. I guess in worst case scenario, there could be actual, a trial on these charges.
Hunter Biden entering a not guilty plea. The Federal Reserve raising its key interest rate for the 11th time in 17 months. Three Marines found inside a vehicle in North Carolina died of carbon monoxide poisoning. That is according to the Pender County Sheriff's Office. Justice Department filing a preliminary injunction asking a court to force Texas to remove a floating border barrier made of buoys and razor wire. This is ABC News. Today marks 75 years since President Truman signed an order banning segregation in the armed forces. Seven automakers are taking on Tesla's electric vehicle charging network.
BMW, General Motors, Honda, Mercedes-Benz, Hyundai, Kia, and Stellantis are partnering up to install high-speed EV chargers across the U.S. and Canada. They say they're planning to build 30,000 of them by the end of the decade. The carmakers say the new network will incorporate Tesla's charging technology known as the North American Charging Standard, and it comes as a number of automakers, including GM, have said their future EVs will move to adopt that Tesla standard. Mike Dubusky, ABC News.
State of emergency declared on the Greek island of Rhodes, where wildfires have destroyed homes and forced thousands to evacuate. Security and Exchange Commission adopting rules requiring public companies to disclose within 4 days all cybersecurity breaches that could affect their bottom lines. Andy Field, ABC News.
Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup.
For the Talk of Green Bay News, I'm Pete Schwabe. Here's what you need to know. Today was day three of testimony in the trial of Taylor Shabusiness. Shabusiness is on trial for killing and dismembering Shad Therion back in February of 2022. Today, the jury watched video of Shabusiness telling detectives how she dismembered Therion after killing him. So far in the trial, the jury has learned how the victim's mother found her son's remains, heard from detectives who were first on the scene, and saw a photo Shabusiness took of herself with a picture of Jeffrey Dahmer. We'll keep you posted on any new developments. The Oneida Nation is celebrating its 200th anniversary of being in Wisconsin this week. According to ExploreOneida.com, the Oneida arrived in northeast Wisconsin when it was still part of the Michigan Territory in 1823. The celebration at various locations around the area started yesterday and runs through July 30th. For more information on events and activities, please visit ExploreOneida.com. I'm Pete Schwabe for the Talk of Green Bay News.
This summer, 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW has a new starting lineup. Starting at 6 a.m., The Mayor and Mino. Then at 8, The Earl Ingram Show. 10 to 12, As Goes Wisconsin. At noon, Civic Media Network News. At 12:15, Town Call. 1 to 3, The Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. 4 to 6, The Devil's Advocates with Dom and Crude. And 6 to 7, The Maggie Dawn Show.
On 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW.
Don't let biased algorithms or degree screens or exclusive professional networks, or stereotypes. Don't let anything keep you from discovering the half of the workforce who are stars. Workers skilled through alternative routes rather than a bachelor's degree. It's time to tear the paper ceiling and see the stars beyond it. Find out how you can make stars part of your talent strategy at tearthepaperceiling.org. Brought to you by Opportunity at Work and the Ad Council.
The RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight. The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know it's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
Radio keeps your community informed, entertained, and connected. It's what we're all about at the Civic Media Network of local radio stations.
We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin.
This includes a commitment to news.
Now we want to invite you to join Civic Media's exclusive Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News. It's a place to share your community's news and chat with others from across the state about it.
Join the Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News, today. It's the perfect companion to your local Civic Media radio station. The Todd Allbush Show.
Trigby Olson, senior advisor to the project, Lincoln Project, that is, that this is authoritarianism and the early, as Matt Flynn likes to say, the little cat's feet of fascism creeping in.
And the next time I see Scott Walker tweeting about Ronald Reagan taught us, there's never been a bigger bunch of balderdash ever perpetrated on people.
The Todd Allbush Show. Weekday afternoons from 1 till 3 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
Tom from Madtown. Welcome, Tom.
Hey, Tom.
Hey, guys. Heard you talking about Robin Voss, so I called Robin Voss's office and said, yeah, why is DEI so dangerous? And nothing. The guy just stopped talking. I said, hello, are you there? I called him back and the phone got picked up and then they didn't say anything. You know, maybe you'll learn something if you listen to the Devil's Advocate.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Not going to be able to hear.
Okay,
I need to do it on. Am I okay to go? Okay.
You're listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show with Liza Hallenbrand. Today, we will be talking with Bryn Seaman and Patricia German from Wisconsin Aging Advocacy Network about about the room for improvements in hospital discharge process, especially when it comes to supporting the family caregiver. The Wisconsin Aging Advocacy Network is a collaboration of organizations and individuals working with and for Wisconsin's older adults to shape public policy and improve the quality of life for older people. They advocate for all older adults by educating the community and policymakers on particular issues impacting older adults, mobilizing people on priority issues, and advocating for change. Thank you, Bryn, for being with me here today. Today is a big day for the Wisconsin Aging Advocacy Network. Gosh, that's a mouthful. Because you dropped a press release and a PSA regarding the Wisconsin CARE Act. Can you tell listeners, Bryn, what the Wisconsin CARE Act stands for, its purpose, and why the Wisconsin Aging Advocacy Network is advocating for it to become law?
Hi, good evening. Thank you for having me. I'd be happy to share a bit about the CARE Act. As such, it is an acronym. We like those acronyms in our social services and healthcare fields, and it stands for Caregiver, Advise, Record, and Enable Act. The idea and the three main points of the act are to offer the opportunity for a patient who's being hospitalized to identify a family caregiver in their patient record. The identification is important because then it's the advise piece and advising those family caregivers of updates and most importantly, plans for discharge of that patient and of that loved one. And the third main tenet of the CARE Act is providing the family caregiver who's been identified in the chart and a part of those discharge planning conversations with the education, instruction, and training for the care that needs to take place following discharge. So three main points really to incorporate the family caregivers as part of the care, the discharge planning.
I see. And, you know, this PSA video was made to explain the need for the CARE Act and will be released today and will be on the Empowered Caregiver Community Facebook page. So please go check it out, share it, and spread the awareness on this issue. Bryn, what is the goal behind creating the CARE Act PSA, and where can people go to share it if they're not on Facebook?
You asked me a question, too, that I realized I didn't answer, which is why is Juan advocating, the Wisconsin Aging Advocacy Network, advocating for this to become law? And that leads really well into the question you just asked of supporting successful patient outcomes. The opportunity for successful patient outcomes upon discharge are numerous, but chief among them, no readmission to the hospital. Empowering the caregiver so that they feel confident with the training that's expected. We know that about 80% of all care in the home is now being provided by family caregivers. So equipping them is something that we want to be able to do through the passage of the CARE Act. And the PSA is really that. It's asking that there be a bit of a mind shift in not thinking of contacting family caregivers as an extra step, or as one more thing to do if I'm a hospital discharge social worker, nurse, or doctor, but instead really see them as an ally. They're the person who's going to be helping this patient, hopefully not return to the hospital, and hopefully really getting quality care and having a quality experience of life after discharge. The PSA can be found hopefully in a lot of places soon with the press release, certainly on Facebook. But if you don't have access to Facebook, we also have it on our wisconsincaregiver.org site. That's all one word, wisconsincaregiver.org.
Wonderful. And legislators always say that hearing stories
from their constituents is really what makes a difference. It puts everything into perspective for the need for change. I want to play just a few sound bites from the CARE Act PSA video that shares some of those stories. Anna, if you're ready, could you play clip one?
I have just been so astonished in the discharging planning process, how ill-equipped I felt and how out of control every situation felt. I would be handed a list.
Bryn, if the CARE Act was in place, how could you see the outcome for this being different? And I think that the end of it got cut off. But what she went on to say is when she picked up, I believe it was her father from the hospital, she was given an entire list, I think a half a dozen appointments that she needed to attend to. And she was in a executive position at work and had to travel and had lots of meetings. So it wasn't realistic for her to be just handed a list and being told where she had to be. How do you think that could be different if the CARE Act was in place?
The family caregiver actually shares us the answer. If there was a phone call made, if she could even be a part telephonically of some of those discussions, she wouldn't have to rework the entire schedule, right? So we're not now wasting hospital staff time, outpatient or specialty clinic time. We're not wasting her time as a family caregiver. And we aren't stressing out the patient by wondering if they're going to get to their medical appointment. And we certainly aren't then stressing out the family caregiver who's now trying to rearrange six different medical appointments. Involving the family caregiver in that case would have led her to be a part of all of those follow-up appointments or find somebody, maybe identify another family caregiver who could also be a part of them. And also having just logistics in place, work, life, children, schedules, rides, transportation, and just being able to pre-plan and have that confidence allows for the caregiver to not be burned out, allows for them to provide a better quality of care to the patient. And frankly, it's a win-win for everybody. The hospitals win. They don't want to see that patient again in, you know, a readmission type of way. They want to see that patient successful, as does the family, and that patient wants to be able to recover and have a good quality of life after discharge.
Well, it seems like it would totally make sense for me. And I can't even imagine having to go through and reschedule six different appointments with specialists. I do want to play another clip from the PSA. Anna, if you're ready.
My husband happened to show up at the time that they were wheeling him out to go to a facility that they hadn't told us was happening. And it's, again, not ill-intent. We're an extra step. And they said, he's his own person. We said, well, how are you going to pay for that transportation? As it was a cash transportation they had set up. He had no money. He can't manage anything like that. Where's power attorney for finance, too? So they were going to send him in a transport without cash to pay the driver. We didn't know where he was going. So that was probably not a good situation. We had to follow the transport to find where he was being discharged to.
Okay, that one is hard for me to wrap my head around. That sounds just flat out crazy. Patricia, can you let listeners know how that could have went different if the CARE Act was in place?
If the Caregiver Act was in place, the family caregiver would have been included at the initial admission and been asked by the patient who that family caregiver was, and they would have been notified where the transfer was going to. Another scenario, say the patient wasn't transferred, but they were being
Patricia,
discharged.
I want to hear the rest.
Family caregiver.
I want to hear the rest of this, but we've come up on a break, so hold that thought.
Solving mysteries is hard. Streaming them isn't. This Mystery Month on BritBox, stream the best selection of British mysteries, including the newest seasons of Luther, Silent Witness, Father Brown, Vera, and more. stream with a free trial now at BritBox.com.
It's so hot. Wait. Now it's going to rain? It is summer in Wisconsin.
As much as we love it, we love to hate it too. Find a forecast you can count on along with the in-depth details you need only from the Civic Media Weather Team.
These extended conditions have led us into a flash drought. Sitting in these above average temperatures with minimal rain has swiftly altered the local climate.
Your weather and more for your part of Wisconsin.
On your local Civic Media radio station and streaming on the Civic Media app.
This summer, 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW has a new starting lineup. Woo-hoo! Starting at 6 AM, the Mayor and Mino. Then at 8, the Earl Ingram Show. 10 to 12, As Goes Wisconsin. At noon, Civic Media Network News. At 12:15, Town Call. 1 to 3, the Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flint Direct. 4 to 6, the Devil's Advocates with Dom and Crude. And 6 to 7, the Maggie Dawn Show.
On 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW.
Civic Media radio stations providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
Here's your updated forecast. Partly cloudy skies tonight with lows around 66. Northeasterly winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. High temperatures reach up to 90 tomorrow. Mainly sunny skies and calm. Chance for scattered thunderstorms tomorrow night. Lows level off around 68. Mainly cloudy skies expected. Turning cooler Friday and Saturday with highs from the upper 70s to the low 80s. Thunderstorms possible both days. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Ray Miller. Right now, it's 82.
This summer, 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW has a new starting lineup. 1 to 3, The Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flint Direct
on WGBW.
You are listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, and I'm your host, Liza Hellenbrand, and we are talking today about the CARE Act and what we can do to get that act put into law. It is currently in law in more than 40 states. Wisconsin, unfortunately, is not one of them. So we had just listened to a story about where a caregiver actually had to follow her father in public transportation to figure out where he was going because nobody shared that information with her. I want to move on and introduce Heidi Russell, who is the director of Aging at Shawnee County Human Services. Welcome, Heidi. Can you tell listeners why you think the CARE Act is important and your own and how your own family's discharge experience could have gone better if the CARE Act was in place? Can you hear me, Heidi? Sounds like there's some more technical issues going on. We've been having them all day, so why stop now? That's all right. I'm just going to roll on to the next segment, and we'll come back to Heidi if she can hear us a little bit later on.
Oh, there she is.
There you are. Are you with us, Heidi?
I am. I'm very sorry. I had trouble with my phone getting to the unmuting myself.
You know what? That is a-okay. We have been having all sorts of troubles over here, so join the club. So what I wanted to ask you is, why do you feel like the CARE Act is important, and how could your own family's discharge experience have gone a little better if the CARE Act was in place?
So, and I am here as a former caregiver. I cared for my father very, very closely for 2 years prior to his death. And he had several hospitalizations. And one of them, he was leaving the hospital with a catheter. And the nurse had said, oh, we showed your dad. We showed him how to do everything. And I'm looking at her going, my dad has severe arthritis, where his hands from years of being a butcher were, you know, really almost folded over. And I knew my dad was slightly confused, but he was very social and happy and always, I'm great. It's fine. It's wonderful. And he just wanted to go home. And fortunately, in a past career, I worked in a nursing home, so I knew how to empty a catheter and not change the catheter, but change the bags. And I knew how to do all of that. And the nurse looked at me and said, "Oh, we showed your dad. It's fine. You can take him home." And dad just looked at me and said, "Yep, let's go." And I got home and I said, "Okay, show me how you can do it." And he looked at me and said, "I have no idea how to do this."
Well, you know, that's such an excellent point, because, you know, when people are in the hospital, they're probably itching to go home. The whole experience is emotional and overwhelming and confusing. So when they're telling you that stuff at the end for the discharge process, I would guess for a lot of folks, it would kind of go in one ear and out the other. And that's why having a caregiver identified is such a crucial part for a successful discharge. And like I had mentioned, over 40 states have enacted the CARE Act. And the CARE Act itself, one, asks patients if they have a family caregiver. Two, contact that person if the patient is to be discharged or transferred. And three, teach the family caregiver how to provide the care that the patient will need after discharge. And it's unfortunate that Wisconsin is not one of many states that has a CARE Act in place. And as a result, hospitals really have no obligation to identify the person that will be caring for the patient after discharge, nor are they required to make sure that that person has the capabilities and the resources to care. So next, I want to talk to Patricia German, who is a grassroots family caregiver advocate. Patricia, Bryn had shared with me earlier that you made your own acronym for CARE, and we're going to be going up against a commercial break again, so I'm going to have to watch the time. But can you let listeners know what CARE stands for to you?
Well, the actual acronym is Caregiver Advisory Board, but in my mindset, the C is consideration of after discharge care, identifying who the caregiver will be after discharge as soon as possible after admission. The A is arranging for discharge, allowing adequate time for family and friend caregivers to coordinate work and personal responsibilities. The R is for resources, accommodating varying knowledge bases of caregivers, providing adequate home care after discharge. And the E is for engaging family and friends and in-hospital care techniques and allowing them to feel comfortable with the hospital discharge care.
I like that. I like how you added to that. And you had told me a story a few days ago about a dear neighbor and friend of yours, and I still cannot stop thinking about this story. I want to wait until after the commercial break because I don't want to get interrupted for this, but it's a story of where the CARE Act literally could have saved someone's life. And I just want to say that the CARE Act is not a new concept. Bryn, do you know exactly how many states have passed their version of the CARE Act and what the outcomes are that they're seeing?
So there is 42 states, according to AARP, the District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, and the U.S. Virgin Islands. So there's 8 states, one of them, including Wisconsin, that have yet to pass this vital act for hospital discharge.
How frustrating. Come on, Wisconsin. We can do better. When we come back from this short break, we're going to hear again from Patricia and how she actually lost a loved one that situation may have been prevented with the CARE Act.
This summer, 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW has a new starting lineup.
4 to 6, The Devil's Advocates with Dom and Crude.
6 to 7, The Maggie Dawn Show
on WGBW.
ABC News, I'm Andy Field.
So now what? That plea deal Hunter Biden's attorney struck with prosecutors for unpaid taxes fell apart in court as the judge scrutinized every part of the agreement. ABC News legal contributor Kimberly Whaley.
If it really is that they were on different islands, then it's possible that you'll have to adjourn this and they're going to take it outside of the courtroom, outside of the context to try to hash out something that is more bulletproofed moving forward. I guess worst case scenario, there could be actual, you know, trial on these charges.
Hunter Biden entering a not guilty plea. The Federal Reserve raising its key interest rate for the 11th time in 17 months. Three Marines found inside a vehicle in North Carolina died of carbon monoxide poisoning. That is according to the Pender County Sheriff's Office. Justice Department filing a preliminary injunction asking a court to force Texas to remove a floating border barrier made of buoys and razor wire. This is ABC News.
For the Talk of Green Bay News, I'm Pete Schwabe. Here's what you need to know. Business owners downtown are still coping with the fallout from a car that rammed into a building. Civic Media's Melissa Kay reports.
Demolition is scheduled to start today on the Main Street Commons building following Sunday night's crash that caused irreparable damage. Some businesses have been forced to relocate. In all, 14 businesses were affected. Main Street between St. George Street and North Irwin Avenue will be closed until at least Friday. Yesterday, the Brown County DA's office charged the woman who caused the damage by crashing her minivan into the building, 29-year-old Marissa Reed. Reed is being charged with reckless driving, bail jumping, and driving with a suspended license.
Last night's Mega Millions drawing for the $820 million jackpot resulted in a tie. None of us won the big prize. Again, the jackpot for Friday night's drawing is now $910 million.
Pete Schwabe, WGBW 97.9 News.
If you care about animals or crops, you probably care how the weather could impact both.
It's summer in Wisconsin, and the success of your efforts often depends on knowing the forecast. Count on your local Civic Media weather team for all the information you need.
Crops roots are also growing deeper in search for water, which is bad news because when rain finally falls, it will sit shallow and be absorbed in the top layers of the soil.
Your weather and more for your part of Wisconsin.
On your local Civic Media radio station and streaming on the app.
Attention, Wisconsin veterans.
Hello, I'm Tony Evers, the governor of Wisconsin. If you are a veteran struggling to pay for rent, utilities, or other life-sustaining services, I want you to know that the Veterans Rental Assistance Program is here to help. You have already made a most noble sacrifice. You shouldn't have to continue doing so. We are here to support you. The Veterans Rental Assistance Program was created by and for people living in Wisconsin, with benefit approvals being issued to veterans in just days, not months. It's never easy to ask for assistance, but rest assured, we're here to help. You've always been there for us. We want you to know that we're here for you. Call 833-WISVRAP. That's 833-947-8727. Or visit VRAPWI.com. On behalf of the state of Wisconsin, thank you.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
You're listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, and today the Wisconsin Aging Advocacy Network is releasing a PSA, which can be found and shared on the Empowered Caregiver Community Facebook page, which is advocating for the CARE Act to become law in Wisconsin. The CARE Act, one, asks patients if they have a family caregiver, two, contacts that person when the patient is to be discharged or transferred, and three, teaches the family caregiver on how to provide the care the patient will need after discharge. So before break, I was talking about how Patricia had told me a story that unfortunately did not end well for her dear friend and neighbor. Patricia, can you tell us briefly that story and how it could have went different if the CARE Act was in place?
Yes, definitely. Her untimely death occurred from sepsis, severe infection. Literally, her biopsy sites got so infected that her blood pressure could not sustain life. I took action Monday to obtain wound care for my friend. She was too weak and experiencing high chronic pain from cancer to advocate for herself. Two wellness checks were performed on Monday, but no intervention. Wednesday, she was visited in an effort to set up wound care. However, the method of email allowing managed care too much for someone in her condition to perform. I thought wound care had been set up for her, but no one came Thursday. Friday morning, I must advocate to save her. She told me twice on Friday, "Patty, I need help." Pardon me, but I'm getting emotional. But could not answer. She wanted me to call 911. I took action. Called 911. She was cardiac arrested in the parking lot under the care of EMTs. They revived her, took her to the hospital. The hospital put her on life support, but her body could not obtain blood pressure, and she expired 2 hours later. If the CARES Act had been in place, a caregiver would have been identified by the medical facility, and she was not able to care for herself. They couldn't instruct them on proper care and wound care, and she would not have deceased. If her wound care had been administered initially upon her discharge under the CARES Act, a family or friend such as myself would have had training in wound care and deadly infection, and I could have helped her. Mm. And it's so sad.
It is. And
the
CARES Act
needs to be passed in the state of Wisconsin.
It's just so hard to hear that. And unfortunately, there was some cutout on my end. I don't know if it went through on the radio waves. I just want to recap that story in case people had trouble hearing it. And that was that Patricia had a friend and neighbor that was discharged from the hospital, sent home on her own with wounds that needed to be cared for. And I believe, didn't you say earlier that she also had a G-tube, that she was being fed through G-tube? If I remember the story correctly. And she didn't know how to do that. Nobody was contacted or identified as a caregiver. So Patricia, being her friend, went over to check on her, saw her in this dire condition, ended up calling 911 and unfortunately she passed away. So if the CARE Act was in place, and I'm getting chills just saying this, she could have identified somebody as her caregiver. It could be Patricia, if that was the person closest to her or a family member. That person would have been identified, notified that she was being discharged, and then given proper instructions to care for her after she got home. So I'm so sorry for your loss, Patricia. It's just a heart-wrenching story. And I had asked Brent earlier, and then we ran up into commercial break, so I apologize. The CARE Act is in 42 or 43 states right now. Wisconsin is not one of them. So can you just let listeners know what they're seeing, that what outcomes they're seeing?
Sure. So what I can offer is that it's a mixed bag, and not because there's negative outcomes related to the states that have implemented the CARE Act. It's just difficult to decipher and pull apart what is a direct result of the CARE Act and what is also a result of several different federal policies that have been put into place recently, really focusing on patient and family-centered care. So because we have lots of really good help, including family caregivers in many of those states under federal policy, it's hard to know if that was the driving force of some of these positive outcomes, or if we could directly tie them to the CARE Act. I think in years to come, we are going to see lots of studies that really highlight that. And another thing to consider, too, is that the CARE Act doesn't look the same in every state that has it. We can very much Wisconsinize this CARE Act. What I mean by that is identify Wisconsin resources, identify Wisconsin supports so that upon discharge, the hospital staff feel confident about the resources they're providing and giving, but also the families know how to easily access those local resources. And also having some reasonable expectations. So when you look at some of the studies and surveys that have been done, it's all a process. It's not a one and done thing. It's not a matter of changing software simply to ask for a family caregiver and then putting them in the chart. There is a system of training that needs to happen. However, I was happy to see that of executives that were surveyed in, I believe, the state of Pennsylvania, most hospital executives said that this was pretty low touch. So while it's a process to implement, there was over a 92% agreement that this is something that can relatively easily be put into place with changes that aren't expensive and don't require a lot of hospital staff time. So I fear that sometimes it has a negative connotation, but in fact, not only is this possibly a really low touch solution, but I think it also has a culture shift with how hospitals can really utilize family caregivers who are there. They want to help. They want to be a part of this solution and really give good care and see them again. It's not that extra step, but an ally in having that patient success.
Well, you know, it doesn't sound like rocket science to me, to be honest. And I love that we can create this how we want it. We can make it the Wisconsin way. I advocate every caregiver gets some cheese curds and a case of beer out the door. But hey, I'll take whatever I can get. I actually was given a bit of history on the CARE Act recently. The CARE Act was actually formally introduced as a bill in Wisconsin. So it does have some history in Wisconsin. It was introduced as a bill in the fall of 2019 by two Republican legislators with bipartisan support. After a press release introducing the bill went out, lobbyists came in with their pressure against the bill, and it unfortunately ended up not going anywhere. I am joined today by some grassroots advocates who are working very hard to revive the CARE Act in Wisconsin. And you know, the CARE Act to me sounds like it would be a good thing. But if I was working in the medical community, I might say, we already do that. We already do a good job of the discharge process, and having a mandate to take these additional steps will require additional resources, and these steps aren't feasible in our already strained system. Heidi or Bryn, would you like to rebuttal that, or what would you ladies say to overcome that objection? Heidi, you have some thoughts on it?
I think the thing that's hard is if you're not identified formally as the caregiver and you have somebody who was as social as my father and smiled big and, you know, was always in a good mood, you assume that he probably knows what he's doing. And he really didn't. He didn't understand what the steps were. He couldn't physically do it. And had I not had the jobs I've had, I would not have been able to do the things that he needed done. My sister came to relieve me the next day, and she's taught second grade for 48 years. And she looked at me and said, I have to do what? And I said, well, it's easy. You just unscrew the cap and you empty it in the toilet, then you wipe it up. And, you know, and I'm explaining this all to her, and she's just looking at me going, oh my God, what would I do if I didn't have you?
Right.
Well, and I think you're highlighting, Heidi, why there isn't a choice in the matter. So there's going to be people that are left to do this, family members left to do this. And do we just want to see, you know, kind of toss the dice and see if they're going to have the experience Heidi had and be able to pick up that baton and run with it, if you will? Or instead, would we rather be proactive with our limited resources and really equip the family caregivers that are there, thereby not only relieving our strained hospital staff, I also have to imagine there's a huge sense of job satisfaction in knowing you've done a job well done. I don't think there's at all any malicious intent or hope by the hospital staff, you know, to just quickly get this over with. They want a good, successful outcome as well. And it would feel good to not see that patient back again for the reason that they were there for care for in the first place. Exactly. So are we going to go ahead and just kind of continue as is and kick the can down the road? Or instead, are we just going to really utilize this workforce and the patient-centered and family-centered movement to really to take those family caregivers and use them to our advantage and equip them with the training they need?
Well, and I love how you said that this really prevents strain on the system by, you're right, not having people readmitted or have, you know, either worse conditions, things become worse after they leave. Currently, the CARE Act does not have any sponsors in legislation. It is your goal to change that. And as we know, when it comes to governmental change, it is a slow-moving process. And if one side says yes, that means that the other side, for whatever reason, feels the need to automatically say no. If Wisconsinites really want to see change in the discharge process, Bryn, what do they have to do?
As with anything, I'm learning right along with our grassroots caregivers that you have to share your personal stories and you have to be persistent. Share the video so that you bring awareness to these situations. And if you have a personal experience and you now, knowing what the CARE Act, have a passion to see this become a part of Wisconsin legislation, you are always able, as a matter of fact, it's encouraged to contact your senators, contact your local legislative representatives, share your personal story. Chances are they can connect with you. With the number of aging people, with as many caregivers as we know doing that in-home care, they may well too have one of those experiences where, you know, they followed mom and dad into the hospital, or a neighbor, a friend, or a sister, a spouse, and then had to go through that discharge process as well. So we just have to advocate. We can't be afraid to be repetitive, share the story, take the survey. That's also a part of that press release so that we can collect information and get a good idea of people around Wisconsin who support this. And again, contact your local legislators.
You're right. And share your story. And I bet you that they can relate, because how does the saying go? I'm going to flub it up. And I've got a lot of people that can say it in their sleep. When it comes to being a caregiver, either you are one, you're going to be one, you've been one, or you're going to need one. So all of these legislators at some point in time, I think that this is something that would hit home for them. When we come back, we're going to talk more about the Wisconsin CARE Act and improving the discharge process in hospitals.
It doesn't hurt, feels good to help. And when you give blood, you provide a life-saving difference for others. The need doesn't take a summer break. So we have a challenge for you, started by Civic Media's Earl Ingram.
Congratulations to all those people and all of you who donate blood.
Take a selfie while giving blood, then post it along with hashtag Civic Pints. Give blood and you could get a prize too. Find challenge details and a donation center near you at civicmedia.us/giveblood. civicmedia.us/giveblood.
Protect your family from radon. Radon causes lung cancer, and half the homes in Green Bay test high. Request a free test kit at newradon.com. That's newradon.com.
This summer, 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW has a new starting lineup.
Starting at 6 a.m., The Mayor and Mino. Then at 8, The Earl Ingram Show. 10 to 12, As Goes Wisconsin. At noon, Civic Media Network News. At 12:15, Town Call. 1 to 3, The Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. 4 to 6, The Devil's Advocates with Dom and Crude. And 6 to 7, The Maggie Dawn Show. On 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW.
It's never personal, only politics. The Devil's Advocates Radio Show with Dom and Crute. Weekdays from 4 until 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Here's your updated forecast. 66 tonight under partly cloudy skies. East winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. Mainly clear skies and quiet tomorrow. Highs level off around 90. Chance for scattered storms tomorrow night. Lows dip down to about 68. Mainly cloudy skies expected. Turning cooler Friday and Saturday with highs from the upper 70s to the low 80s. Storms possible both days. Once again, a low of 66 tonight. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Ray Miller. Right now, it's 82.
This summer, 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW has a new starting lineup. 10 to 12, As Goes Wisconsin. At noon, Town Call. On WGBW.
You're listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show. And today, the Wisconsin Aging Advocacy Network is releasing a PSA, which can be found and shared on the Empowered Caregiver Community Facebook page, which is advocating for the CARE Act to become law in Wisconsin. The CARE Act, one, asks patients if they have a family caregiver. Two, contacts that person when the patient is to be discharged or transferred. And three, teaches the family caregiver how to provide the care the patient will need after discharge. The Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality is the lead federal agency charged with improving the safety and quality of healthcare for all Americans. They wrote an article called Readmissions and Adverse Events After Discharge, September 7th, 2019, which they recommended accurately assessing patients' abilities to care for themselves after discharge can be difficult and requires coordinated multidisciplinary effort. Failure to enlist appropriate resources to help with the transition from hospital to home or another healthcare setting may leave patients vulnerable. So the agency that is tasked for improving health and safety said that basically this is it. This needs to be addressed. We need to make sure that patients leave the hospital with their support person included in the conversation, and they know how to take care of themselves once they go on home. So they go on to say that patients and their families, and they included and their families, must understand their diagnosis, their follow-up needs, and whom to contact if questions or problems arise after discharge. This might be outside of the CARE Act a little bit, but if Heidi and Bryn could just let me know, since you guys both support the aging population in Wisconsin and are really focused on rural and underserved populations, could you tell me in a dream world scenario what assessing the patient's abilities and enlisting appropriate resources might look like? I'll have Bryn go first.
Sure. So I think, as Heidi actually alluded to, somebody can present as very capable and competent. And I think that many times we're focused on the legality. Do they have a legal decision maker? Do they have a healthcare power of attorney or a healthcare power of finance? I'm sorry, a power of finance, a power of attorney, my goodness. and because we get so focused on those legal matters, sometimes we're not seeing what's right in front of us. So being able to not only determine their social skill set, their cognitive ability, and some of that is really just learned from good conversation with the family caregiver who's surrounding them, who's probably with them when they're admitted or comes to visit them or is going to be the person taking care of them. So in an ideal world, really putting that person-centered or family-centered practice into play is how you're going to get a full picture of the resources around them. Because resources in one place for one person may look quite different than the resources for somebody else. Especially as you talked about in rural or underserved populations, it may not be as resource-rich as, you know, an urbanized area. So a lot of that conversation can come with just really good conversation.
Well, and you made a great point that really goes to what Heidi was saying earlier. You know, it's the caregiver that really knows that patient, right? So when dad is being happy and jolly and smiling and ready to get the heck out of there, it can be the caregiver that just whispers and says, he doesn't know what you're saying, right? So Heidi, let me ask you, in a dream world scenario, what does assessing the patient's abilities and enlisting appropriate resources look like to you?
So I can actually answer that really well. My husband had both of his knees replaced, and both knees were done at a surgical center, not the same day, 6 weeks apart. And before we left, both he and I, as his caregiver, had to sign off that the nurse had given us instructions and showed us how to get up out of bed, how to, you know, walk with his walker. The therapist came and took us and said, how many steps do you have getting up into your house? Oh, you've got three. Okay, let's go to the staircase and practice. You know, it was, they gave us handouts of, and they were just printed off a computer of, this was the surgery that your husband had. This is what he has to do. These are how he has to do his pain meds. And then we both had to sign off that we understood that. And the whole process didn't take that long. You know, I was with the nurse with my dad probably just as long. You know, I think it's because the surgery center was so specialized
that
all those processes set up. I was with my father, I was at a small rural hospital, and the care there is very good. And there was no ill intent. The nurses were very kind, very helpful, really, you know, wanted him to do well. You know, they just got lucky that I happened to know what I'm doing with a catheter.
Well, sure. And if he was a happy-go-lucky guy, you know, that's probably one of few that they were looking like not to get rid of, you know, but they could keep him around for a while, right? He's pleasurable. Not everyone is. And I like that you both mentioned that. And I know that it's not the hospital's intentions to, you know, boot these guys out the door and just let them figure it out. And I'm sure that a lot of hospitals do take some steps in the discharge process. However, each hospital is different. And, you know, when you get into these smaller rural communities where there aren't as many resources, there can be problems. And if things aren't mandated, then, you know, you can be great to one patient and maybe just not so great to the next. So that's where I see the importance behind this. But, you know, the Wisconsin Aging Advocacy Network is not the only one that's advocating for change in the hospital discharge process. The RAISE Family Caregiver Advisory Council, which is a federal advisory council that was formed to address the caregiver crisis in America, has five main goals, which includes over 350 actions. And goal number two is family caregivers are recognized, engaged, and supported as key partners with providers of healthcare and long-term service supports. I wish I could grab back the time that I lost when we were having technical issues. There's so much more to talk about. But please check out the video, share the video, call your legislator, write your legislator, and tell your story. This is an important act that can save lives. Thank you, caregivers. I know caregiving can be hard and difficult, but I just want to say, you got this.
Thank you.
attention, Wisconsin veterans.
Hello, I'm Tony Evers, the governor of Wisconsin. If you are a veteran struggling to pay for rent, utilities, or other life-sustaining services, I want you to know that the Veterans Rental Assistance Program is here to help. You have already made a most noble sacrifice. You shouldn't have to continue doing so. We are here to support you. The Veterans Rental Assistance Program was created by and for people living in Wisconsin, with benefit approvals being issued to veterans in just days, not months. It's never easy to ask for assistance, but rest assured, we're here to help. You've always been there for us. We want you to know that we're here for you. Call 833-WISVRAP. That's 833-947-8727. Or visit.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay.
WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay.
And always streaming on the Civic Media